Odin and the tales surrounding him are a central part of many Scandinavian and Western European cultural storytelling traditions. But this telling is my responsibility in the tradition of the oral storyteller. I hope you'll forgive any embellishments I indulge in as I tell it to you. This is Breakfast with Gilgamesh, Season 3. Cattle die. Kinsmen die. I will die. My deeds will live on. There was darkness, and only darkness. I don't remember this, but I know it. For an eternity, the black void swirled around itself, until, as if it had always been there, a mist, and from the mist, a frost, and from the frost, a being. This being was called Ymir. Ymir existed. He had always existed. He had eyes to see the void, and hands to grasp its meaning. There was nothing before, and now there was Ymir, and it pressed against itself and the nothingness around it. For another eternity, Ymir was alone, and this made him mad. He raged against the darkness until he slept, and when he slept, he dreamed, and from his dreams came others. These others were horrible to behold. Children of their dreamer's insanity. Wretched, writhing things that gagged and screamed and bit. Ymir's dreaming overtook him, and the things he dreamed joined him in the abyss. Squirming eternity of flesh and teeth. Hungry and alive, they began to eat each other. To crawl on Ymir's body and rip at him. Ymir writhed in the agony of the other. He gnashed his teeth and tore at himself, devouring and choking down his own nightmares, never satiated. His madness, the madness of the first being, lingers, they say, in each of us. It bites at the edge of our knowing. It nurtures our fear of the dark, fear of what's beyond it, and what lurks within it. There are many tales about what happened next, many bards with many tongues telling many lies. But my tongue is the oldest, and it tells the best lies. So hear them, and though you don't remember, know it was so. A light came from the east, they say, blazing white and shrieking. It must have looked like the dawn to Ymir. It must have terrified him. Good. Whatever this light was and wherever it came from, within it was the beginning, and from it came the end. A white-hot fire burned away the chaos of the void, and from it he sprang. As great as a mountain, and as radiant as a star. He fell upon Ymir, and he yelped and clawed. Upon his belly he found his repulsive children. Monsters, trolls, frost giants, evildoers, the lot of them. Don't ask me what their sin was. It's too horrible to say. Don't ask me what they did to deserve what he gave them. It is best forgotten. Know that it had to be done. Take comfort that your father knew what to make of them. It was Immer who gave him his first name. It was his first word, the first word ever spoken. Its meaning has no source beyond him, its power no wielder but him. Odin. Odin, god of victory, god of battle. He raised his arm and clenched Immer's head in his hand. Immer screamed, and Odin screamed back. Immer's neck tore from his shoulders, and the squirming mess of his disgusting children tumbled from the wound. He held the first being's head high, and all that sprang from his corpse was of Odin's making. That, my children, my sweet children, is how creation came to be. That, as you are so fond of saying, is where all the trouble began. Odin banished Immer's children to the furthest reaches of the void. They came to hate the light which Odin sprang from, and it was for their own good that they should retreat into the comfort of darkness, their rightful home. As for Immer himself, Odin lifted his ruin and stretched his flesh as a trapper strings up a bear for gutting and skinning. From his flesh came soil. It blanketed his bones, which became the mountains, riddled as they were with his teeth, the stones. The frost of the void went downward, low and creeping as its children. The fire from which Odin emerged rose high, bathing all in light and heat, scattering Ymir's kin further and further from his corpse. Odin laid a kiss on the lips of that severed head, and its flesh burned away in crackling sparks that became the stars. He reached up and grasped a handful of that fire, and set it just so to be the sun which warms your crops and kisses the cheeks of your children. He set the skull high, and with it sheltered the new world made by Odin's deeds, by his hands, and it became the dome of the sky above all creation. From nothing, Ymir had come, and from his madness sprang a million nightmares beyond comprehension. And so he came from the east, he alone to bring order from chaos, to make the world such as it is. Yes, not perfect, but beautiful and alive. Yet, with nothing to admire it, nothing to care for the beauty of its machinery, to tell its stories in fine company, nobody to know of its creator and his great deeds, nobody to worship and sing and feast from its infinite and abounding gifts. Odin's dominion was all of creation, and as if they had always been there, sprang his kin. They tamed the highest and most beautiful of the realms, and called it Asgard. And so they became the Aesir, and in the center of Asgard, great Valhalla, the hall of the Aesir, and within it, Odin and his tribe. For some time they were content to enjoy the bounty of the world, and fend the children of Ymir from the edges of it. Odin built for himself a tower, and from that tower he watched the world, and on the edges of that world he saw something. A light, far to the west, growing, burning. He thought of Ymir, and it troubled him. So came the Vanir, powerful, intelligent, and dangerous. They wanted creation for themselves, and so the Aesir went to war, and with war comes kings, and so the Aesir named Odin their king. The Aesir adorned their king in golden armor and named him Allfather, a reminder to their enemy that it was from him that all sprang forth. Odin took up the spear and the helm and outstretched his arm, and from his will came legions. The war was long and costly. No ground was given, and much blood was spilt. Odin blessed each soldier who went out to fight. He inspired them with a lust for blood and combat. Each battle was like a storm, a symphony of utter violence. In his secret heart, he hoped the war would never end, and for an eternity, it didn't. The Vanir would not be repelled, and the Aesir would not be conquered. On and on the battles raged, until even the thirst for war within the Aesir found its limits, and Odin was pleaded with to show wisdom and sue for peace. And so he did. Odin ended the Vanir War, and the first pact of the gods was made, a pact that peace would be kept by oath and threat both. On the day of the exchanging of hostages, a golden plate was set on the ground between the two tribes, and each Aesir and each Vanir spit into this bowl. And when Odin spit into it at last, the Vanir used their magic, and from the bowl emerged a man, and the Vanir named him Kwasir. He was beautiful to behold, and his eyes shimmered with an intelligence and a kindness so brilliant that Odin was in awe of him. As the Vanir retreated with their hostages to Vanaheim, their newly won lands, they declared that Kwasir the Wanderer would always be welcome to travel anywhere he desired within their realm. Kwasir, for his part, watched the Vanir disappear over the horizon, then turned to Odin and placed his warm white hand on Odin's chest as a mother calms a babe. He looked at Odin with some amount of pity, for Kwasir's wisdom was such that he knew what Odin's fate would be. Cattle die, Odin. Kinsmen die, King of Asgard. I will die, Allfather. But deeds live on. I do not know where the tree came from. It is as old as the fates themselves. It is immense and impossible. On it sits every single thing that has ever been. There is no part of creation it does not touch with its branches. Its roots are forever, deep in the heart of creation itself, beyond the earth, beyond hell. Its branches sway in the winds of heaven. Nothing is higher, nothing is beyond it. If Odin had a hand in its creation, of this I have no memory. It simply is. Yggdrasil, the world tree. The war of the Aesir and the Vanir had tilled and churned the earth. As life emerged from the rivulets of creation, Odin watched. He saw the middle realm writhe with life in every shape and size. Creatures who ran, swam and flew, creatures who fed, and creatures who were fed upon. As the burning skies became twinkling stars, as the mountains wore down by the north wind capped with snow, as the lesser trees sprang from the ground in tribute to their god Yggdrasil, Odin walked among them, and thought how unjust that Yggdrasil should have its congregation, and not he, the creator of the world. And so he reaped the flesh of two trees, an ash and an alder, and from them he fashioned two beings. As the trees resemble Yggdrasil, so these beings resembled Odin, with eyes to behold his creation, and hands to grasp it, minds to understand their world, and feet to walk upon it. In them he interred a spirit, so they might know their part in Odin's creation, and, more importantly, know it was created, and worship its creator. Kwasir, who could walk in any realm he chose, who was beloved by all and wisest of all beings, chose to live among these beings. He wandered from place to place, in caves, huts, villages, and castles. Wherever he went, he spread his wisdom to any who would listen. This made them clever. Clever like their father, Odin, and just as ambitious. Human beings were beloved by Odin. They were made in his image, clever and strong and wise. They learned eagerly from Kwasir, and from each other. They explored the ragged edges of their home. They stretched their hand out over every mountain peak and into every dark cave. Always Odin longed to be among his children. At every opportunity, he forsook his glittering armor and golden spear for a dark cloak and a walking stick, so that he could walk among men. He loved their smell, the ways they loved each other, the ways they explored and settled and thrived in every corner of Midgard, his creation. But most of all, he loved the ways they worshipped him, their sacrifices, their lamentations, their pleading. Odin understood man, because men were like him, smart, industrious, vicious. He learned their ways, their cultures and customs, what they liked to hunt and eat, how they loved, how they fought, the ways in which they invented themselves, just as he did, from nothing at all. They sang songs and told tales. They imagined what might happen in the future, and that was what Odin admired most about them. But there was something about men which troubled Odin greatly. Men were chased always by death. They could become wise. They could win many victories in battle. They could survive every winter they saw. But eventually, death would come to them. They withered like fruit on a vine and fell to time itself. What hope could there be for the future of men if every time they made a new one, an older one would die? And the grief it brought to the ones who were left to carry on was well beyond anything Odin could possibly comprehend. This troubled him. He could see beyond Midgard to the land of the Frost Giants, beyond Yggdrasil's roots to the bowers of Hel. But he could not see beyond death. He could not grasp death's secrets. Time went on. Kwasir's wisdom pervaded. Soon he had his own disciples, his own worshippers. Odin walked among them, disguised as an old man. He would huddle among the crowds who listened to the stories they told. Stories of men and gods. Stories of the universe in its beginning. Stories of what happened after death. Stories of Odin. Whether they were true or not mattered little. What mattered was that they stirred the soul. Their magic was that their truth lied not in matters of fact, but in matters of meaning. Time went on, and from these stories men were inspired to invent new things. Things like kings, and soldiers, and wars. Humanity play-acted crude mockeries of the Aesir, and claimed by right of petty violence a dominion that was in truth Odin's. In their desire to be like their creator, they subjugated themselves to systems of oppression. A man, like any other, imbued with the power to decide the fate of his kinsmen, one man above all others. An absurd and disgusting habit, which Odin detested as much for its blasphemy as for its barbarity. One day, as he wandered among the people in a kingdom belonging to a certain mad king, he came across a tree, and from it hung a man from the thickest branch by a sailor's rope. Odin approached the tree, admiring its dark beauty, a monument to death itself. Odin outstretched his hand, and as his fingers met the feet of the man, he startled as the corpse twitched and writhed. Odin looked up and matched his gaze to the hung man, and realized instantly that the hanged man was him. He was wearing Odin's face as his eyes bulged and his dry, bleeding tongue jutted from between his teeth. Odin watched this man die. From this moment, Odin dedicated himself to finding Kwasir and killing him. The Aesir loved Kwasir, perhaps loved him even more than they loved their Allfather. Odin would get no help from them in this task. They couldn't possibly understand. He walked among men for many more years, watching them go about their petty lives, speaking to them and imparting his own wisdom, wisdom Kwasir could never hold. A cruel and angry wisdom, a wisdom with no beauty, a wisdom of nature. Men would look upon Odin and see a man with a white beard, but the instant he was out of sight, they would know to whom they had spoken. He traded stories at hearth after hearth. Each night, he would crouch by a fire and tell a story, one that was full of blood and sex and conquest, one that would remind you of something you had heard, some yarn spun on some other night about a kindly young man with skin like the moon, who sang a sweet song and was off in some direction. But which direction? Ah, yes, I see. Well, good night. At last Odin came to a great open field, and in this field were 9 slaves, and each labored from dawn to dusk at reaping harvest. The strange old man who had emerged from the road was harmless enough. He had a darkness about him, but not unpleasantly so, like a summer's night, or the shadows cast by trees before a campfire. He told stories of trolls and giants, of gods and their scheming. He spoke of hidden treasures guarded by dragons, of wise old wizards and brave warriors. And when he asked for a tale in return, the 9 men all had the same one in mind. A fantastic little story about a sweet man with alabaster skin who visited their master and was welcomed sweetly. And that night was killed, and his corpse dried of all its blood. For the master was a giant, and the pale man's blood smelled like sweet honey wine. When the tale was told, and the fire dim, the 9 men went to sleep in their tents, chuckling at the poor fate of that man. But the old man, huddled under his blue cloak, stared at the embers until dawn crept over the trees. The 9 men emerged from their tents, scythes in hand, and regarded the old man kindly. He offered to help them reap their harvest in return for their hospitality, and they laughed, assuring him that whatever feeble help he could offer would not be necessary. The old man followed anyway. When they reached the field, the old man produced, of all things, a scythe of his own, which they could have sworn was a simple walking stick. He pushed his cloak back, tilted his road-worn hat to expose his sweating brow, and swiped at the grain in one smooth motion. When he did, the slaves were astonished to see an entire acre of wheat cut down. They crowded around the old man and begged to know his secret. Coyly, he produced a whetstone, and explained that it was made for him by the dwarves, and made any blade sharpened on it fine enough to slice the wind itself in twain. The 9 slaves could see this man now for what he was, but so overcome with desire for the whetstone were they that they showed no deference to their Allfather. They scrambled over each other, grasping and swiping at Odin's hand. He flicked the stone into the air above them, and at once they pounced upon one another with their scythes to be the one who held the stone, until all that was left was a mountain of blood and gore. Odin reached into the pile of corpses and recovered his whetstone, then continued on through the fields to the master's house. The giant's home was simple and peaceful, made of great stones no man could lift, thatched with trees lifted whole from the earth. Odin breached the doorway and announced himself feebly. The giant greeted him coldly, wondering if human meat tasted different when aged. Odin politely introduced himself as Vegtam and motioned with his thin, shaking wrist to the half-reaped field, offering to finish the work. The giant scoffed and waved him off. He had 9 slaves who worked the field each day from dawn until dusk. He had no need for the services of an old beggar. Where then were these men? Asked Vegtim. The giant peeked his head out the doorframe and called out to no reply. He scratched his chin and scanned the field carefully, but it sat vacant and unattended. Calmly, Vegtim shouldered his way past the giant and approached the field. Once more he swung his scythe. Once more an acre of wheat came tumbling down. The giant exclaimed, and quickly offered old Vegtim whatever he wanted should he complete the harvest by sundown. By noon, the field was harvested, and the bundles stacked neatly before the giant's doorway. The giant, having planned to kill and eat the old man either way from the beginning, asked purely out of curiosity what the old man's desired reward was. Vegtim ambled towards him, and wheezed that he had heard tell of a curious wine found only on the giant's farm. The giant, confused, asked how Vegtim could have learned of this, and so Vegtim, straightening his back and lifting the brim of his hat, told the giant everything. Who he was, what he had done to the 9 men who worked his field, and what he wanted. Before the giant could move, the old man pressed his walking stick that was a scythe and was now a spear to the giant's neck, its shimmering tip drawing just a single drop of blood. The giant, frozen in fear, begged Odin to spare him and swore that the story was a lie. When Odin didn't move, the giant pleaded, assuring him that the wine had already been drunk. Odin grinned, and that scared the giant so much he relieved himself there on his own doorway. That could not be true, because if the giant had drank the mead of poetry, he would have known who Odin was the moment he looked at him. The giant tearfully pleaded to be spared, and swore he would produce the wine. Odin's walking stick, once again a walking stick, was removed from the giant's throat, and he scurried inside and quickly produced 3 sealed red clay pots and set them at Odin's feet. Odin asked if the giant had any idea who the man he killed was, what he represented, what it meant to the world to lose him. That slobbering mountain of tears could only gibber apology after apology. Odin's spear found the giant's mouth and removed his head from his body. As the ravens gathered above, Odin squatted there on the ground and tore the seals off each pot, and drank in one gulp until the last drop of each one was down his throat. The first jug was poetry, the enormous beauty of not only what was, but what could be, flooded Odin's mind and made him drunk. The second jug was logic, and the elegant machinery of nature came into intense and shining focus. The third and final jug was wisdom. It slaked the thirst which the first 2 jugs produced, and from his slick, reddened lips whispered the words, "Cattle, die. Kinsmen, die. I will die. My deeds will live on." Odin, his mind swimming with visions of beauty and possibility, fell into a deep sleep. In his dreaming, he saw 2 ravens in flight, circling one another in the sky, and above them, a bright crescent moon, and below them, the world tree, Yggdrasil. The ravens circled endlessly, their black, clever eyes glaring down at the tree. At its base, entangled in thick and twining roots, 2 wolves, their eyes wild, mouths froth with hunger. They scratched and bit at the tendrils of wood which bound them, crying up to the moon, pleading to the ravens to free them. Between the ravens and the wolves, the tree seemed to glow as if on fire, and from a thick branch at its center, was a rope, strapped tight, and dangling from that rope was a man. And Odin knew it was the man in that tree who wore his face. But he wasn't frightened. He wanted to approach. He wanted to touch the man's foot and understand. He came closer, above the wolves and below the ravens, and reached out his hand to touch the hung man. He looked up at his face and saw something he did not expect. One of the hung man's eyes was a bored-out socket, and from it pale fire spilled like water from a stream. Odin cupped his hands together under the hung man's chin and collected the water. He hunched over to look into the pool in his hands, and there he saw his own face, the same eye gored, the same fire water spilling from it into his hands. In frantic thirst, he brought his hands to his mouth and drank. It burned down his throat. It stung as it dribbled down his beard. And as it poured from his eyes and into his hands, and poured from his hands and into his mouth, he felt as if he was drowning, as if it would never stop coming. He tilted his head backwards and saw the ravens circling above, and when he screamed, he awoke with a start in a tranquil, sheltered place, a dark place. There was a pool of shimmering water, and all around him the great roots of the world tree. He pressed his fingers into the soft, warm soil and crawled like a beggar towards the pool. He could feel its warmth on his skin. His mind felt like an old wicker basket, overfull and bursting, spilling out and pressing against itself. He groaned and heaved himself forward. He felt tears dribble down his cheek and into his beard. And as he collapsed on the lip of the pool, he heard the call of the two ravens high above, far beyond the tangle of root and branch. Odin lifted himself to his knees and hunched over the pool. He watched his tears drop into the water and mix with it. He watched the ripples settle and the pool become serene again, and knew in that moment the price he had to pay. Odin, All-Father, God of poetry, God of battle, God of war, God of victory, demanded of himself a sacrifice. And what sacrifice could be worthy of one so great? One who defeated Ymir, the giant, who banished his children to the furthest reaches of the world, who fought the first war and brokered the first peace. What sacrifice could such a god make to himself? He threw off his clothing in a fugue of passion, scratching at his own skin until it bled. He growled and screamed and beat his chest. He wrapped his head with his fists as it squeezed and pressed against itself. And then, in one assured motion, he pressed his thumb and forefinger into the socket of his left eye and jerked backwards, plucking it from its socket. He felt no pain. He felt only the ecstasy of relief, as if a valve had been released. The taste of his blood as it spilled down his face excited him. It was warm and salty. It tasted like the meat of poetry, the meat of logic, the meat of wisdom. Like a starving dog, he leapt forward and submerged his head in the pool below, whose waters mixed with his blood. He drank in great heaving gulps, his shoulders quivering. There it was. There was what he had been searching for. The visions of past and present and future. He saw the black abyss and Ymir within it. He saw the blazing light from the east. He saw the world made not by one, but by three who were one. He saw a garden of peace and the first human beings. He saw the serpent who offered them wisdom and the judgment of their god befall them for daring to taste it. He saw wrath and anger. He saw the ravens circling above and the wolves scratching below. He saw the world tree, twirling gracefully in the void. On each branch, a world. And in each world, an Odin. And in each Odin, a world tree. Forever, and 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 forever. He saw the Aesir and their wars with the children of Ymir. He saw a child, a foundling, a being of many shapes, man and woman, giant and god, good and evil, conqueror and fool. He saw its children, who would end the world, a serpent who would consume itself, and a wolf who would consume everything else. Odin watched the future, sure that his knowledge of it would free him. He stared with his good eye as the foundling came to the Aesir as a brother. He saw his children and their play with this foundling. He saw himself care for the foundling, teach him, punish him. He saw the wolf, bound in chains, and knew those chains would one day break, and that nothing would satisfy its hunger. Always the wolf would be waiting. Always the wolf would hunger. Hunger for Odin. Hunger for the gods. Hunger for the world. And it would feed. Odin pulled his head from the pool and heaved in great sobs. He had attained wisdom beyond any mind. He had paid for it in blood and madness, and it meant nothing. There was no amount of blood that would save him or his world. There was no villain who could be conquered, no war that could be won, no price that could be paid to slake the thirst of death. He would die, just as men died, just as cattle died. He would die. He would die. Then let it be so. Let it be a grand death. Let the world return to a blackness before Ymir. Let the mountains crumble and the stars fall. Let teeth gnash until all is consumed. Let the tree rot and crumble. Let the flesh turn to dust. Let all light extinguish. All the better. All the more. Odin will know its secrets. Odin will glare upon death with his one eye. He will know it in the light of the east. He will know it in the light of the moon and the sun and the stars. He will remember it like the raven remembers. He will hold it in his hand and wield it like a spear. He will sacrifice himself to it like a priest to a god, and he will become it. He will become death itself. He will swing his scythe and reap the harvest he grew. He will taste death as a lover. Odin lifted his shambles, scraping the blood from his skin, and planted his foot on a knot at the base of the world tree, and began to climb, digging his fingers into the bark of Yggdrasil. The world tree moaned as its flesh ripped. Odin climbed forever, climbed until he found a branch, and by that branch he pulled himself up. He laughed as the ravens called above. He laughed as the moonlight pierced the canopy. He laughed as he tied the rope to the world tree, and to himself. He looked up, in reverent awe. He could see the nine worlds, all swirling and churning in the branches above. He wondered for a moment if he might pluck the moon from the sky and place it in the empty socket in his face. If he might return all he had learned. If he might empty his head and sleep and forget what he had seen. That thought passed through him as his spear split his belly through. Clean through his guts the spear went, and he chuckled. But the spear sticking from him was as the very branch he sat on, as if he himself were the world tree. Odin slid from the branch and fell into blackness. The world disappeared and was replaced by a warm abyss. I wondered if my head would snap from my neck, if from my severed corpse a new world might spring, if in my dreaming I would see what lay beyond death itself, beyond the end of all things. I wondered if I might finally know. In the darkness, I watched a light, blazing white and approaching from the east, and knew with perfect clarity, with perfect wisdom, what awaited. Cattle die. Kinsmen die. I will die. But my deeds will live on. Thank you to Dan Simpson of Eyebrow Cinema on YouTube, Mike Wood of the They Might Be Movies podcast, Tanner Rasmussen, Malcolm Derricks, James T. Mackin, and the rest of the chorus who contributed to this episode. Thank you to Sam Beck, who designed my logo, Thomas Holden and Hidden, who designed the music you heard throughout, and to all my friends, partners, and collaborators. Next episode, Krishna and the Universe. This is Breakfast with Gilgamesh.